From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
A spokesperson for Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan denied any wrongdoing hours after the state's most powerful politician appeared to have been implicated in a bribery scheme with ComEd.
There's an awful lot of information that he's going to need to provide, and I would expect him to do so. Public service is a high calling. The people of our state deserve to know all the facts. They deserve to have people come forth and tell everything that they know.
We need to have a broad list of ethics reform. It's long overdue. We need to consider everything that's been filed and anything that will address the current situation we are now dealing with.
Our federal investigations of corruption in Illinois are ongoing. We have a lot of work ahead of us, and we will get that work done.
That's the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, John Lausch. Before that, reaction from Republican State Representative Dan Ugaste and also Governor J.B. Pritzker, all weighing in on a federal investigation involving Commonwealth Edison and a bribery scheme that has brought allegations against the Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel continues to practice social distancing. Charlie Wheeler is at his home. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Dave McKinney. He covers government and politics for public station WBEZ in Chicago. Dave, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean.
So when we sat down last week, Dave, you weren't with us at the time, but we had just heard the breaking news about Commonwealth Edison admitting to a bribery scheme, and the company implicated somebody who was identified in federal documents as Public Official A. Later, that's become more clear that that's longtime Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. And let me be clear, Madigan has not been charged with any wrongdoing, but since the announcement that was made last week, there has been plenty of reaction, including from the Speaker. And why don't we start with that? Dave, what has the Speaker's office said about what the federal prosecutor unveiled?
Well, I mean, the Speaker, as you can imagine, put out a two-paragraph statement that just simply said, look, people, I have done nothing wrong. The allegations that are spelled out in this this filing from the federal government that, you know, jobs and contracts were being sought by the Speaker and his people in exchange for favorable legislative treatment of ComEd and Exelon, flatly false, he says. And I think that you expect to hear that from him, certainly. But this is a pretty devastating legal blow to him, where I think, if nothing else, I mean, you know, he may emerge unscathed, as he has so often in his career when there have been crises at different points. But this is going to be a very costly defense for him, I think, because it's clear he's a big target of the federal government.
And I want to get more into that here in a little bit, but let's talk just a bit for those that haven't followed this as closely or don't recall exactly what was said. What were the main points that were outlined by the U.S. attorney?
Well, I mean, this focused on ComEd primarily. It talked about how ComEd, from 2011 all the way up through 2019, had engaged in what essentially was a bribery scheme in Springfield, where they would agree to hire precinct captains, for example, that were recommended by Madigan, allegedly by Madigan's political organization, and they would contract with different entities that were linked to the Speaker's political organization, allegedly, in exchange for this favorable treatment. And you know, there were two major pieces of legislation that came down the pike that, you know, during that period of time. One was in 2011, which was called the Smart Grid Bill, and that's when ComEd wanted to, you know, retrofit all of the commercial and residential buildings that have service with them with these new computerized, more advanced technologically meters to monitor, you know, usage. And so that was part of it. And then in 2016, another bill called FEJA, which was the Future Energy Jobs Act, and you know, the cornerstone of that really was a big subsidy from ratepayers that was authorized to bail out two of Exelon's cash-strapped nuclear plants. And so there was big money at stake here for both Exelon and ComEd as a result of these two bills. And what the feds basically said is that, you know, for a very paltry amount of money comparatively, ComEd was basically able to play Springfield like a violin.
Charlie, it's been a week since we first got word of the breaking news that was happening that we talked about right when the show was recorded last time. You've had a chance to see more details, more of this, hear more from people. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Anything that has changed your mind over the past week?
Well, I guess one of my initial observations, being somewhat of a cynic, I guess, is that ComEd gave benefits allegedly worth, what, $2 million? Well, the Speaker of the House in Ohio, who got indicted and arrested, took $60 million from their utilities. So I'm guessing we're a lot cheaper than Ohio. And their Speaker, by the way, is a Republican. So as we've known for years in Illinois, corruption can be bipartisan. But I'll go back to what I said last week and what I've said consistently over the years. Michael Madigan is a very intelligent individual. He's a very shrewd individual. He knows exactly where the lines are, and he'll go right up to the line, but he won't go over it. And I would be very surprised if the U.S. attorney is going to find anybody who will say, yes, Mike Madigan said to me, if you do this for me, I will do this for you. So at the moment, it's all, in a sense, hearsay. It's people saying, well, we gave somebody a job on the recommendation of somebody else who said that this would be something that would be helpful with the Speaker. So I think he probably will not be charged if, and I guess part of that is, if the U.S. attorney had the goods on him, he would have been indicted last week when all the rest of this broke. Yep. And it seems to me that until there is someone who can actually make that statement, Madigan is going to remain as Speaker. And if you look carefully at what all the Democrats, with the exception of a couple, what they've been saying is that he should step down. He should resign immediately if these things are true. And so that's the escape clause, I guess, if these things are true. Well, how do we find out if they're true? Either the Speaker says, yes, guys, I'm sorry, I did it, I fess up, or he's convicted in a court.
Well, Dave, let me go to that, what Charlie's saying there, get your thoughts on it. But at the same time, when we hear that, yes, if these are true, we've seen these federal investigations, they drag for a long period of time, and the federal government is usually not ones to say, hey, we're done, we've done all we're going to do here, and everybody else that wasn't charged is off the hook. They almost just leave this, leave you hanging. You don't know what's coming or if anything more is coming. So, again, there were people surprised last week to hear the Illinois House Speaker's office mentioned by the federal prosecutor's office, yet again, no charges filed. So does that signal something?
Well, I mean, I think for all of us, I think the most recent point of reference that we have is the Blagojevich case, and how we have to remember, I mean, that started out in a really couple of obscure places, the Health Facilities Planning Board and the Teachers Retirement System. And it really wasn't until years later that Blagojevich himself became directly implicated and charged. And I think, none of us know what's going to happen to Madigan here. I mean, I do have to say this is very serious. It's a situation in that document that federal prosecutors filed in court last Friday. You know, they attached this moniker, Public Official A, to Madigan, which is ironic because that's what Blagojevich was called, Public Official A. But in this Friday filing, they went so far as to say, well, this person, Public Official A, also happens to be the Illinois House Speaker. So they went out of their way to basically, embarrass
him,
to really kind of target him. And I think, Charlie, you may be right that there is not enough here to get Madigan, but I can't confidently say that. And I think the reason why is, remember with Blagojevich, there were recordings that became pivotal, and those resulted in not only his impeachment, but also his convictions. And I think, for these cases really to kind of get over the finish line, there's a natural skepticism, I think, in the public and juries about political people. But I do think that those tapes become vital. And did Madigan show up on any of them? We don't know. We don't even know if there are to any extent, tapes here.
But yeah,
I think that's going to be a pivotal part.
Well, let me ask about the being in the legislature or other politicians like Governor J.B. Pritzker, for example. Pritzker was made some pretty strong statements after this announcement last week, and he's continued to do so. But it's been more on the lines of what Charlie had indicated, which is, the speaker has a lot to answer for. And if he doesn't, if these charges are true, he should step down. So they've always thrown that caveat in. At the same time, you have some others in the legislature who I think would not be that sad to see Michael Madigan leave, both some Democrats and Republicans. Dave, the members of the House, the Illinois Progressive Caucus, they put out some pretty strongly worded statements as well this week. So is he going to face this type of pressure? Do you think this is going to, if there are no charges, is this going to kind of go away for a little while, or is he going to continue to face this type of pressure?
Well, I think if all we have between now and next, late January, early February, whenever the vote to become the next speaker happens, if this is all we have right now, it's a very close call for him, but he probably prevails because, if you don't have direct evidence that he engaged in wrongdoing, well, that makes it tough. But I do think that, he is facing a whole set of challenges here, unlike anything I've seen anyway. I mean, Charlie's followed him a lot longer than me, but the thing about Madigan is like he has this aura about him of infallibility, untouchability. How he just kind of operates at a different altitude than the rest of Springfield. But you have to remember, I mean, he's had a whole series of things go on, within his governmental and political offices, over the last couple of years that reflect, I don't know if it's carelessness or neglect or just, greed on the part of people who work for him. But I mean, the situation with one of his aides, Kevin Quinn, former aides, implicated in the Elena Hampton sexual harassment case. And then, of course, Tim Mapes, the longtime chief of staff, being forced out. So, I mean, you've seen this kind of upheaval around him in an orbit that usually is pretty stable. So I think, at least from my perspective, I mean, I'm kind of looking at this and wondering, is he as meticulous as we all know him to be at this stage of the game? I don't know. I mean, I think, as this plays out over the coming months, we're gonna understand a lot more about, how involved he may have been in all of this stuff with ComEd.
And some of his most trusted aides, Charlie, have moved on, including his former chief of staff and many others. I mean, he's, as Dave mentioned, there has been upheaval there.
Yeah, and to go back to what Dave said, it's quite possible that, to use the, what would you say, the cliche, that Madigan has lost a step. And I can say that without sounding like I'm being an ageist or whatever, because I'm actually older than Madigan is by, 5-6 months. And maybe he's not as careful as he was in the sense of watching what his subordinates are doing. I think he'd still be careful enough that they're not going to find a tape with him incriminating himself.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, joined by Charlie Wheeler, and our guest this week is Dave McKinney with WBEZ. Dave, you also reported on Commonwealth Edison, which has been a little bit lost to some people in all of this, especially in the state government circles, agreeing to pay a big fine, and you took a little closer look financially at what that means for the company.
Well, yeah, my colleague Dan Miahopoulos and I spent some time kind of going through financial statements that the company, both ComEd and Exelon, filed with the Illinois Commerce Commission over the years. And, and what we found was that, these big pieces of legislation that, really kind of sucked the oxygen out of the 2011 legislative session and the same in 2016, because like every lobbyist in town somehow had a piece of this action. These big pieces of legislation, increase their bottom line really dramatically. And what that means is for 70% of the state that relies on Commonwealth Edison for power, they're paying more as a result of what happened in Springfield and what is laid out in the federal filing, this bribery scheme that happened has caused everybody's electricity bills to go up. I mean, we found, for example, that, you know, the amount of revenue that, that the state approved for ComEd to collect for the cost of power, it's increased more than 30% since 2011. The same period, ComEd's net annual operating income went up by more than 50%. So what we're seeing is just a, you know, an increase that far exceeds inflation during that period of time. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the show, this nuclear plant, there were two nuclear plants in 2016 that were the object of Exelon trying to get permission to go after ratepayers to help subsidize those things. Well, you know, over 10 years, just what they got out of Springfield, for that piece alone, ratepayers are going to be paying as much as $2 billion more. So, I mean, the amount of money that, that ComEd and Exelon got out of what they did in Springfield far exceeds the $200 million fine that they agreed to pay the federal government. And ratepayers are really kind of the ones left here kind of figuring out, well, are they going to get anything back? And that answer is really not certain at this point.
And Charlie, you've looked at that legislation and when they have passed, and it's not just been Michael Madigan, the sole person voting for this stuff. This has been across the board. Democrats and Republicans have supported this.
Yeah, it's interesting because the legislation that Dave was referring to, the 2016 legislation that was one of the targets mentioned in the federal papers or documents, was dubbed the Future Energy Jobs Act. And it had support from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. As a matter of fact, I actually went back and looked in the legislative records. And in the Senate, it had five chief sponsors, four of whom were Republicans, including then Senate Republican leader Christine Rodonio. And it was seen as a very important jobs issue in those areas of the state where those nuclear power plants were located that ComEd was going to close. So you had the unions for it. You had legislators from that area for it. You had the fact that there was provisions in there that the environmentalists liked. So it was not just one man orchestrating this. The same thing with the bill in 2011. That also had bipartisan sponsorship, and it was had environmental support. And the argument was that if we put these new, you know, semi-intelligent meters on your home, then we'll be better able to control the use of electricity, and you can better able yourself to use power when there's less of a demand, so we don't have to rev up the generators as much. You know, I'm obviously not an engineer, but there were arguments that were made that enabled people to vote for it and say, well, this makes good sense.
Dave, before we leave this topic, there has been some people, including Republicans, saying that the Illinois, especially the Illinois House, should hold some hearings on this, take a look at ComEd's lobbying practices, what it's meant. But the head of the House, I want to make sure I get it right, the House Energy and Environment Committee, that's Representative Ann Williams. She's a Chicago House Democrat. She, at this point, has said she doesn't see the need to do that, that they may address some of these issues next year when the legislature is in its spring session in 2021. But it would seem like this is the type of thing that quite often lawmakers do come back and hold hearings on and try to get to the bottom of what's been taking place. So a little surprising to you that right now no hearings are in the works?
Well, I mean, you know, every sort of great corruption scandal that has happened during my time covering these guys, I mean, you know, I think back to Jim Edgar, the MSI scandal didn't ever directly implicate him, but we got the Gift Ban Act that came out of that because there were such gifts being lavished by a state contractor on people inside Edgar's administration. Same thing with George Ryan. We had his efforts to kind of undercut the inspector general in the Secretary of State's office, or at least the investigators within that office, resulted in a whole series of ethics reforms when Rod Blagojevich came into office that brought inspectors general into the mix. And so every time we have one of these corruption scandals play out, that's the immediate response. People want cover for it, and they want to show that they're trying to respond to it. And it may just be with this that there's still a lot of, you know, I guess you could say lack of clarity about what exactly are we trying to legislate here. I mean, one clear-cut thing from having looked at the whole ComEd thing pretty closely over the last year, you know, getting at who ComEd and Exelon hire, you know, who their contractors are, for example, it takes a little bit of doing. And the same thing, you know, in terms of hiring, if that's one of the allegations in the filing last Friday, that, you know, there were young people in Madigan's ward that, you know, were looking for internships, and they were, you know, one by one being walked in the door at ComEd. In the same way with people in the political organization, precinct captains getting hired as meter readers. So there's not a lot of clarity or disclosure or transparency in who they hire and whether there are ties back to the legislature. The bottom line is these utilities are state-regulated entities, and the state has control over them. And you know, there should be a line between the political realm that we see play out in the legislature and what the basic duties of delivering power are, you know, for this utility company to deal with. So I don't know what the ethics reforms are that we'll see arise from this, but I think there will be some. And, you know, it might be the kind of case where it would pay, where it would make sense to wait a little bit longer to see how this all unfolds, so you know kind of what you're legislating for, what you're trying to fix.
I think, wasn't one of the things that Representative Williams suggested might be on the horizon would be to eliminate these automatic rate increases that ComEd gets, where they don't have to go before the Commerce Commission to justify them?
Mm-hmm. She did.
Yeah, clearly.
She did mention that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of minutes left here, but Dave, I want to go back to you. You're in Chicago. That is where President Trump made the announcement that he's going to be sending federal agents into that city to help control some of the violence that we've been seeing there. Not everybody's on board with that. That's safe to say. Mayor Lori Lightfoot, though, had a brief conversation with the president this week. What do we know about what was said between the two of them?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Lightfoot came out of all of this sort of, you know, cautiously optimistic. That was the phrase she used, that Chicago was not going to be turned into another Portland, which for people paying attention out there, you know, situations where there were protests going on and people were allegedly being kind of whisked off the street by, you know, agents in rental cars, not really clear what agency these people were representing, not clear what they had done wrong, and just a total lack of accountability and transparency about who these people are and what they're representing. Lightfoot, I think, had a pretty, you know, she has a decent sense that that's not what we're going to see unfold in Chicago. And don't forget that, you know, Lightfoot is a former federal prosecutor herself, and the most powerful Fed in Chicago right now is the U.S. Attorney John Lausch, and the two of them have a little bit of history together and a personal relationship. So that might be an area where Lightfoot is able to, you know, exert some influence about what kind of federal response is going on here. The president has made violence in Chicago kind of a current theme in his Twitter feed over the time he's been in office. And, you know, there is a legitimate problem in Chicago with murders being way up over what they normally are. And you know, I would say any help that Chicago can get that is legitimate probably could help the situation. But Lightfoot right now thinks that we're not going to see a Portland play out in Chicago.
And just to be clear, a statement was issued by the mayor's office said that any deviation from what has been announced says we will pursue all available legal options to protect Chicagoans. Charlie, does she have really much, you know, could she to say no to this? I mean, might make some people feel as though she's not trying to address crime in the city. So, I mean, she is kind of caught here a little bit.
Well, I think the key thing is what Dave mentioned, the fact that Lori Lightfoot and John Lausch have a personal relationship going back years when they were both assistant U.S. attorneys. And if Lausch gave Lightfoot his word, as apparently he did, that this will not be Portland, these agents will be helping the people on the ground already, the federal agents that are in Chicago and have been forever, and the city and state law enforcement officials going after illegal drugs, going after gangs, going after firearms, she would believe him and hold Lausch to it. But it was interesting because at the same time, a group of activists this week also filed a suit in federal court that is looking for an injunction to prohibit the federal agents from interfering with peaceful protests or making arrests without probable cause. And so the notion is that the people coming to Chicago, the federal people, are going to be additional FBI agents, Drug Enforcement Agency personnel, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives agents who will be under Lausch's supervision, and they'll work with the existing law enforcement community in Chicago, rather than having, you know, the equivalent of stormtroopers be brought in from the Border Patrol or from ICE to just round up people who are protesting. And as Dave said, they do it in camouflage, battle gear. You have no idea who they are, what do they represent. They pick up people with no apparent probable cause. And so I don't think Lightfoot is going to allow that to happen in Chicago. And I think she has Lausch's support that that will not be the case.
And, Dave, just a few seconds here, but the mayor did take some action to try to kind of appease some folks there by announcing that a Columbus statue, it's been high profile there, is going to come down.
Yeah, I mean, the main one, of course, is in Grant Park, and it's been the subject of a lot of protests over the recent weeks and months. And you know, her main point in a statement that was put out early Friday morning by her office was that these things are coming, the statue here and another park in the city, are coming down temporarily because they are a drain on resources right now. Those are the city police officers who are having to kind of, you know, set up perimeters around these statues and make sure that, you know, people are not hurting one another or whatever. But those are resources better spent elsewhere on the south and west sides of the city where violence keeps spiking. And so, you know, that's it. I guess what it kind of reminded me of a little bit was that, you know, these things were taken out in the dark of night. It was a little bit like what Mayor Daley did with Migs Field, 15 years ago, where you know, some dramatic action happened in the middle of the night. And this was done, I'm sure, to just sort of keep whatever protesting was going on, just to kind of make it a non-factor.
Time now for our notes from the field. Charlie?
Well, one of the things that happened this week, while everything else was going on with ComEd and with protests and so on, was that the State Department of Transportation and Governor Pritzker unveiled a new six-year, $21 billion statewide road and bridge improvement plan. IDOT has to come up with a multi-year plan every year and announce it, and so they laid this one out. And the interesting asterisk, if you might, was that the IDOT said that because of the unprecedented, I'm quoting here, unprecedented COVID-19 pandemic and national stay-at-home guidance, the reduced consumption of gas is expected to cause a decrease in motor fuel tax revenue that would be deposited into the state's road and state construction fund. It's not yet known what the actual decrease would be. Therefore, we haven't made any adjustments to the multi-year plan, but we'll continue to monitor the data and make any adjustments deemed necessary. So the guess is that the plan that they laid out probably is going to wind up being modified. Some of the projects are likely to be delayed because the money to support it just is not going to be there.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Dave McKinney with WBEZ. Get a podcast of the show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.